we go. They're off, as they say at the racetrack. Hi, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. On the other side of the glass, and Tom, the remnants of our typhoon that we were talking about yesterday hitting the Aleutian Islands, big wind gusts and big waves. But the good news is the jet stream will be altered starting really the next day or so, and California may get, the Bay Area is calling for some rain, Central California in the High Sierra. Actually, next week they were saying there may even be snow in the Sierra on Monday. Certainly they're calling for snow up in the British Columbia area. Hopefully that will clear out some of the horrible smoke and fires that have been going on up there. So our typhoon friend it's what happens, Tom, when the tropics hit the Siberian cold air.
The tropical moisture hits the Siberian cold air, I would imagine.
Tropical moisture hitting Siberian cold air. Anyway.
Snowflakes.
We may get some rain later in the week from a tropical system, actually next week, off Mexico. So suddenly, the Atlantic was very quiet. The hurricane season in August, I think one of the quietest on record. Atlantic Basin, very active, and certainly now the Pacific has been as well. Buckmaster Show on September the 15th, 2022, a Thursday. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio. The radio station is 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. Call letters are KVOI. We have our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Our live line sponsored by Rincon Ventures when we do our telephone interviews, and we will start the show with one of them today. Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott, Democrat representing District Number 1 on the 5-member Board of Supervisors. Mr. Scott, Supervisor Scott, is the first Democrat to be elected to the District 1 seat in about 50 years. He was elected in 2020. Supervisor Scott, how are you today?
Bill, I'm doing great. Really appreciate this opportunity to be with you, Tom, and your listeners.
Well, thank you, Supervisor. Let's begin with you announced yesterday that it's time to meet your constituents face-to-face. What are you planning?
Well, we've got a series of town halls coming up, Bill. Two of them this month, two of them in October in various locations throughout the district. I think it's very important that my staff and I have the opportunity to give a brief overview of what we've been working on, what some of our key areas of focus have been within the District 1 office, but then devote the bulk of the time during each one of these town halls to hearing from people who want to share with us what their interests and concerns are. I don't think any public official is going to be able to do their job at the level that they're supposed to if they're not interacting with the public as much as possible. And certainly we respond quickly to any calls or emails or visits to the office that we have. We have a policy of responding within 24 hours at least, but we've been wanting to schedule town halls, and we feel that this is the time to start doing it. We started talking about it in the spring, but you know how it is. During the late spring when everybody's focused on getting the school year done, and then during the summer, a lot of people leave Tucson and Pima County. So we thought fall after school had started was a good time to schedule these town halls, and we're hoping for a good turnout at all four of them.
And let's give folks at least the first one that's upcoming. It will be September 27th. The venue will be the Pima County Pima Community College, the Northwest Campus on Shannon Road.
You know, actually, the first one, Bill, is the 21st.
Oh, okay. Yes, I see that.
At the Oro Valley Library.
Okay, I missed that one. Okay, so the kickoff town hall is just around the corner, September 21st.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Oro Valley Library, and I'm sure everybody will turn out and give you what's on their mind. That's going to be from 6 to 7:30 in the evening on September 21st. I want to begin our discussion today, Supervisor, with what was said on this program by your colleague, Supervisor Steve Christie, who felt you just really got too political at the last board meeting when you were talking about how the election went in Pima County. Would you like to respond?
Well, I don't talk to or about any of my colleagues through the media, Bill. So if I had anything to say directly to Supervisor Christie, I'd say it to him either one-on-one or in one of our meetings. But let me share with you and your listeners why I decided to talk about a preliminary status report that we got from county administration on our first foray into using e-poll books to check voters into their polling place and vote centers. As many of your listeners know, because we've been talking about this since the board approved the use of e-poll books and vote centers back in the early spring, we were the last of Arizona's 15 counties to use e-poll books to check voters into their polling place. We were using paper rosters and pre-printed ballots prior to this year. And we were the 12th of the 15 counties to begin using vote centers, which allowed voters to vote anywhere at one that they wanted to at any one of the 129 vote centers that we had going. And we did request an after-action report, and we did say that we wanted the Election Integrity Commission to talk about it in September and the board to talk about it in October, but we got a preliminary status report from county administration, and it was very substantive. It was a seven-page report, and it really hit on a lot of the high points in terms of the successes we had with our first use of e-poll books and vote centers, and I didn't think there was anything wrong with talking about it. I also wanted to use that time to talk about a collection of emails and phone messages that Supervisor Christie and his staff had collected. He had talked about it at length at our previous meeting, and we were encouraged to look through those messages and emails because we were told they were very substantive and spoke to a lot of the concerns that people had about e-poll books and vote centers. But what I found when I went through them was that they really didn't address e-poll books and vote centers as much as they addressed a completely discredited theory about the use of felt tip markers, which I believe both Pima and Maricopa counties, as well as some of the other counties, addressed when it was raised by a lot of the people who are trying to criticize our election systems. When this issue was first raised back in 2020, I think it was addressed substantially. That was the biggest issue that was within this collection of emails and phone messages. There were some references to the use of e-poll books and vote centers, but they were mostly boilerplate complaints from people who didn't think we should have joined the other 14 counties and the majority of the rest of the counties in using these reforms. So I thought when we had a substantive preliminary report from county administration that it warranted being talked about. I don't think that Supervisor Christie liked the fact that I made reference to a recently dismissed lawsuit that was brought by Kerry Lake and Mark Fincham that tried to get Pima and Maricopa counties to stop using our electronic tabulation equipment for the paper ballots that people vote on. But I thought it was fair to point that out. I thought it was also fair to point out some of the courageous and forthright stances that have been taken by our colleagues on the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors. And they have always taken the lead in standing up for their systems and also for standing up for their employees and their volunteers. And I wanted to make those statements. And no, I'm sorry if anybody thought that my comments were political, but as I said during my presentation, facts are stubborn things. And I was talking about the facts throughout that. And if anybody thought it was partisan, then I think that is the filter through which they are viewing those facts.
All right. Speaking of facts, here's some facts about Mona's Danish Bakery. And I don't think anybody can dispute the fact that Mona's has absolutely outstanding pastries. So I think whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, Independent, Green Party, whatever, non-affiliated, everybody agrees Mona's Danish Bakery, the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, home of the Danish Kringle, is a great place for lunch, which is being served right now. Or they do breakfast anytime during hours 6:30 to 3, Tuesday through Saturday. Sunday, they open at 7 and close at 2. And they are taking now Monday off, a well-deserved day off. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com. Steve and the team do a great job up there. We send a lot of Buckmaster listeners up there. In fact, we had a guest on the show yesterday who went after he left the studio. He said, I'm going up to Mona's. So that's the kind of thing that happens. People love Mona's Danish Bakery. All right, more with Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott. We're going to talk a little bit about the RTA, the Regional Transportation Authority, with Supervisor Scott right after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer and fine fare, are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, to the sounds of Chicago. This is the beginning. Well, we're a little bit into, we already had the beginning of the Buckmaster Show. We are now into our second segment in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go back now on the live line and we continue our conversation, our monthly conversation with Pima County Supervisor Democrat representing District 1 on the five-member Board of Supervisors, Rex Scott. Supervisor Scott, Nicole Ludden of the Star had a lengthy, real dig deep piece on the RTA and the funding shortfall that could affect Tucson transportation projects. Where are we right now on the RTA?
Well, Ms. Ludden interviewed me for that story, Bill, and I was pleased to talk with her because I think we're at a very important point in the development of the RTA Next plan and the fulfillment of the projects within the current plan having been approved by the voters in 2006, and it was a 20-year plan that'll expire in 2026. The revenue shortfalls, mostly brought about by revenues that didn't come in during the Great Recession, have caused the RTA board to take a number of steps. First of all, a previous RTA board committed to use all other regional transportation funds to augment RTA revenues so that all of the projects under the current plan can be completed. That decision was made by a previous board back in 2014, and subsequent boards, including this one, have supported that. However, we've also determined that there are going to have to be some of the current projects that are moved from this plan to consideration by the voters when RTA Next goes before them. That is not only because of the revenue shortfall, but it's also because some of these projects, their scope has changed since the voters first looked at them back in 2006. So back in June 2nd, we unanimously voted to move a Pima County project that's on First Avenue and a Pima County Marana project that's on Silverbell Road to RTA Next for the reasons that I just cited, the revenue shortfalls and also the change in scope for both those projects. It's important to point out for the voters that even if an RTA Next package is not approved, those projects will be completed. All the projects in the current RTA plan will be completed. That is the commitment by the board to do that. And these two projects will be front-loaded. They will be among the first to be worked on if RTA Next is approved by the voters. If it isn't, we will use all revenues available to us to make sure those projects and all the projects in the current RTA plan are completed. Simultaneous with those actions, the Citizens Advisory Committee is working to draft an RTA Next plan. They've been hard at work at that for the last several months. There are also going to be discussions between RTA and PAG staff with the mayor and council of the city of Tucson about any current RTA projects within the boundaries of the city that could be considered for RTA Next. Because when the board moved the Marana Pima County project on Silverbell and the Pima County project on First Avenue to RTA Next, the only remaining RTA projects are within the boundaries of the city of Tucson. We're going to have to make some decisions about those Tucson projects at our October meeting, but we want to make sure that we have informed and sufficient input from mayor and council before we take that action, because we've had a series of unanimous votes at our last four meetings, and sometimes they've come about after we walked into those meetings, not thinking there was going to be some basis for agreement, but we found it because everybody on that board is trying to think of the interest of the region first. And we need to be able to come to that same level of agreement in October. So I'm pleased that between now and then, there's going to be discussions between PAG-RTA staff and Marin Council in Tucson so that we can get their input. It's vital so that we can make the right decisions in October.
So, Supervisor, we should point out you are Pima County's representative on, it's a 9-member board, right, of the RTA?
That's correct. Yes.
And so give us, what is the next kind of red letter date? You said in October. What date is that?
October 27th. That will be the next meeting of the RTA board when we need to make some decisions about other current RTA projects that should be considered for RTA next, not only because of the revenue shortfall that I've talked about, but also because of changes in scope and their readiness. Some of those projects are closer to being shovel ready, as they say, than others. So obviously, it's the ones that aren't that should be considered. Because we've got to make up a shortfall of right around $150 million.
So you indicated that there's this sense that there is discord on this board. But did I hear you say at the last couple of meetings have been quite a few unanimous votes?
There's been nothing but unanimous votes with regard to the development of RTA Next and the fulfillment of the current RTA plan. Now, there have been times that we've come into those meetings not sure how we were going to get to that level of agreement, but through listening to each other and compromising and finding common ground that everybody can land on, we have gotten to that point. So, yes, in our last 4 meetings, there have been unanimous votes. And I think that speaks to the concern for fulfilling the current RTA plan and getting an RTA Next plan in front of the voters that is felt by all 9 of us. And I really have a great deal of regard and respect for all 8 of my colleagues, and each one of them deserves credit for what we've been able to achieve at these meetings, because as I said, we weren't always sure we were going to get to that point when we walked into the meeting.
And think about this, all this planning that went into a 20-year plan that does expire in 2026, there was a lot of guesswork involved, and most there, it's been pretty darn accurate, hasn't it, generally?
It absolutely has, Bill. I mean, if people look at the number of projects that have already been completed, and they are the vast majority of the projects that were put before the voters in 2006, and the benefit in terms of enhanced mobility, safety, quality of life for our residents, the RTA is an extraordinary success. And we owe it to the voters to fulfill that plan, and we will no matter what. And we also owe it to the voters to get a new plan in front of them that can cover the period from 2026 to 2046.
Is there any talk about, I guess you have to put this to the voters. You can't just make a statute and extend the program beyond its 20-year life, correct?
Well, no, we can't do that.
Yeah.
But what we must do is complete all of the projects in the current plan.
Mm-hmm.
That is non-negotiable. And even if some of the projects in the current plan are moved to RTA Next for the reasons that I cited earlier, let's suppose that the worst thing happens and RTA Next is not approved. Those projects will still be completed. Our commitment to the voters, based on what they what they cast their ballots for in 2006 is firm and unshakable, and we will use all means necessary to make sure that all the projects in the current plan are completed.
All right, before we go, do you miss a little bit kind of that smell of autumn in the air in Athens, Ohio, and your time back in central Ohio?
You know, I loved growing up in Athens. It's in the foothills of the Appalachians. It is absolutely resplendent with fall color. And I'm going to get a chance to see it because my wife and I are going to go visit family in both Kentucky and Ohio the middle of next month, which will just be an ideal time to enjoy that fall color. But I've been a Southern Arizonan since 1991, and this is home now.
Yeah, but you did pick now a perfect time. That'll be the peak for the autumn color. That's going
to
be a great...
What I try to do, Bill, if I go back east to visit family, I go in the fall and the spring.
Yep.
I avoid winter and summer.
Wise man. All right, Supervisor Rex Scott, talk to you after your trip in October. Be safe. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Look forward to it. You take care.
Thank you very much. We're going to pause right here. UA agronomist Dr. Jeff Silvertooth is in the house. Boy, do we have a lot to unpack with Jeff on the latest on the water situation right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. Using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The way we vote in Pima County is changing. Are you ready? The League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson invites you to visit ReadySetVoteTucson.com to learn about new vote centers for easier in-person voting, new voting districts, and changes to the early voting list. Get ready to vote at ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Brought to you by the League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson. That's ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Get ready to vote.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Thursday edition in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Green Things, one of our great sponsors, located at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, 13-acre site. Beautiful things, everything for the garden, all the plants, the accessories like the Talavera pottery, the Mexican Talavera pottery, all those items that Jan and Jack, the owners, bring up from Mexico as part of the Zocalo Village. Really, it's a great operation. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. Green Things has a wonderful reputation. The service you will get there, they're sales staff is so knowledgeable. They will point you in the right direction. For want to put some color that's going to do well this fall, they'll get that into the right, into your hands, and then you can get home and plant it and have some beautiful things. They're open daily, and they've been in business for over 50 years. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, but we are doing now a couple of studio segments with our friend Dr. Jeff Silvertooth, who is the Buckmaster Show contributor on agriculture, professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science at the University of Arizona Department of Environmental Science. He served on the UA faculty and worked statewide in agriculture since 1987. Professor Silvertooth has been recognized as a fellow for both the American Society of Agronomy and Soil Science Society of America. Jeff Silvertooth, great to see you again. A lot to unpack today on the water situation.
Yeah, there always is. But it's good to see you as well, Bill. Thank you.
You know, why don't we begin with Tom Fairbanks' question that he brought up to you before or during the break, because I think it's kind of gives a big picture. And Tom asked a question, and a good one. He said, you know, whether it's in China with the Yangtze, whether it's over in Europe with the major rivers, there is this lessening of the water flow on mm-hmm. our major waters. Right. And Tom was curious, what's going on?
Well, what you're seeing is a pattern across the world that's similar to what we've been experiencing in the Southwest for the past 20 years. And that is a shift in the climate. Now, what you might be seeing in some places, it might be more a shift in just the weather patterns. Climate's long-term type of patterns. Call the weather like the stuff we get day-to-day, 10 days, maybe a season, you know. But we've been experiencing this kind of pattern for over 20 years out here in the Southwest. So we've seen these drastic declines in our reservoirs. And what we're seeing right now this year around the world, as Tom pointed out, is drought conditions in quite a few places simultaneously. And that is, of course, a point of concern for those folks living in those regions in Europe and in Asia, Africa, South America, I guess, as to some extent. But it's particularly been notarized in the press with these lower water levels in Asia and in Europe. And it's a concern because of the global pattern associated with that. But when you're seeing a climate change, you're seeing that happen on a global scale, and it manifests itself differently in different regions, different parts of the world. And actually, interesting thing about that, Bill, is there's people can argue about climate change, you know, all day long. And the concerns that really come down to me, in my view, is that, you know, we can argue about the causes, but the process is happening. You look at the paleoclimate records just in the Southwest alone, and we have a record in the paleoclimate records, which would look at long-term climate, that droughts like what we've been experiencing the past 20 years can last 30, 50, over 100 years. I mean, the paleoclimate records are
which
there.
Which happened in the 13th century.
Right.
In the Southwest,
right.
And may have been the demise of places like Mesa Verde.
Well, also, too, you just go about 60 miles north of where we are today in Tucson, up to Coolidge, and the Casa Grande National Monument.
Right.
There's an edifice in the desert left by a population, a civilization. Mm-hmm. We refer to them as the Hohokam.
Right.
But they left no written record, but by all available evidence, it was drought, severe drought, that basically caused the demise of their civilization. They collapsed. And so that was all over central Arizona. They had these concentrated populations of people successfully living. But it's based upon all available evidence, it was drought and salinization of their soils that drove them out and dispersed, collapsed. There's records of civilizations that have collapsed all over the planet. And historically, because of drought and changes and shifts in climate, we're experiencing that now. So really, it's a test on our ability as a civilization to adapt, to respond to this.
And I wonder how well we are going to adapt. California, Jeff Silvertooth, is really resisting what the federal government is telling them about Colorado water usage.
Well, you know,
they don't want to play ball. At least they're not indicating they do at this point.
Yeah, if I may, I don't know how deep your audience is into understanding the little background on this, but in that context, because of the drought we have seen, our reservoirs, Lake Mead and Lake Powell, here in the Colorado River in the southwest, were pretty close to capacity at the beginning of this century, and they're down to about 25%, both of them right now, critically low, so much so that in the middle of June, at a Senate Energy and Natural Resource Committee hearing in Washington, D.C., the Bureau of Reclamation Commissioner Camille Towton responded to some questions from Senator Mark Kelly from Arizona. And she responded he was asking her about the Colorado River, the drought, what's the plan to do. And they said they plan to reduce 2 to 4 million acre feet off the budget, a 16.5 million acre water budget on the Colorado. They said they intended to do that this year, but they're going to give the basin states 60 days to come up with a plan, or they were going to act. They said they have the authority and they will act unilaterally to protect the river. So a lot of all the basin states began having discussions, obviously, when that kind of a decree came out, which is a huge task and probably almost huge task in 60 years, not to mention 60 days. But anyway, they began. And the only folks that really came forward, and of course I say this as an Arizonan, but truth of it is, Arizona is the only state that came forward with a plan. Agricultural interests along the lower Colorado River did include the California districts. They also came up with a plan. But the other basin states didn't budge. And the Bureau came out in the middle of August, and the Deputy Secretary of the Department of Interior, Tommy Boudreau, made the statement saying, well, we're just going to follow the drought contingency plan, which is already in place, which is insufficient. We all know that. But Arizona's taken another 80,000 acre foot reduction this year. And California's taken zero. Mexico's taken some out, and also Nevada out of their small allocations. So of the lower basin states, all of us are contributing, except for California. And I don't know what's happening. I read different accounts in the paper, but, you know, they've got the largest share of the water allocation to begin with, the 27%, and the largest share of anyone on the river. And, of course, they have a lot of people, and there's a lot of dependence on that water. So it's a tough one for everybody. But my view, Bill, everybody's got to put some skin in the game to solve this problem.
Tony Davis, who just does a great job for the Arizona Daily Star covering the environment, talked about the future of the Colorado River. He said he was talking about these irrigation and drainage districts along in the Yuma area, along the Colorado. And what is their future? It seems like this could be in danger.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Very great. That's a good question. So we got to put this in context, too. The truth of it is, and Tony pointed this out in his article, several of his articles, that of the total water in the Colorado River watershed, about 80% of it goes to agriculture. And in Arizona itself, 70% of our water and fresh water in the state goes to support agriculture. We're in the desert. It takes water to grow crops and grow animals and grow food. And we all know that if you're going to solve the simple math, if you're going to solve this problem with regard to reducing water diversions and water budgets on a reduced flow of the river, which is only necessary realistically, agriculture is going to have to take some cuts. Now, let's put this in context too, Bill, before we go to what's going to happen next. Arizona agriculture has already taken out 512,000 acre feet. Central Arizona irrigation districts have been decimated this past year with the drought contingency plan tier one reductions. That's 512,000 acre feet. This extra 80,000 acre feet we say is coming out of Arizona's budget this next year in 2023 also is coming out of agriculture in central Arizona. So they're basically wiped out now, those irrigation districts from CAP water. Now the next step is what you ask, and that's over on the main stem of the Colorado. What's the future? My view, what the future should be, who knows what it will be, but my view, Arizona needs agriculture. Agriculture needs water. And we need to be able to support, be able to be strategic about thinking what areas of the state are we going to support. That means where are we going to allocate water for that area. In my place, in my view, one of the places you can make a strong argument with that area that Tony pointed out, in the Yuma area, the lower Colorado River Valley, it's the epicenter for winter vegetable production that we count on in the entire nation. Over 90% of the winter leafy green vegetables are coming out of Yuma area between November and March every year. Now, that's strategically important as a food supply, not to mention durum wheat and several other crops and a lot of other things that come out of there. So it's critically important for us, I think. But that's a good question, what will happen.
But it sounds like you're saying, and I agree with you, some of these areas from a strategic point of view for actual national security need to be protected.
Absolutely, both in the here and now.
Yes.
And I think it's also important that we think about what we do today and the impacts that we'll have on the future generations that are coming down the line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Norman Borlaug, a famous agronomist from Mexico and Semit, with father of the Green Revolution, they say, he made a statement one time that I've always thought about. It says, civilization as we know it could never exist without a stable and abundant food supply.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very true today, and it'll be true in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we do strategically today, we need to put our future generations, I think, in the position to not be dependent on external sources for all their food and fiber. We need to have some capacity locally, regionally, to do that. And I think the Lower Colorado River Valley is a prime place strategically to think that way.
All right, we need to take the break, but yes, I'm not going to hold David, who's on the line, over through the break. If he would like to make a quick comment. David, you're with Dr. Jeff Silvertooth. Go ahead.
I want to bring out the fact that we're in a lot worse trouble than we even realize. West of Phoenix, they approved Douglas Ranch, and that's going to be 100,000 homes. Can you imagine how much water that's going to require? And that's just one of over two dozen giant mega developments. They approved this villages of Anguito near Benson. I went out of my way to oppose it, and everybody at the hearing opposed it, yet the town council of Marana unanimously approved it. And then you got Marana, which is the worst offender in Pima County, where they're just annexing land like crazy and blading the desert and putting up houses that require more water to be pumped out of the Colorado River. Now, agriculture, I understand, uses most water, but agriculture use is declining. A lot of farms are abandoned in Pinal County, but urban development, population growth is exploding. And I think our elected officials in these communities have broken public trust by rezoning for these gigantic communities, giant housing developments, when we obviously do not have the water to sustain it.
Well, David brings up the big kind of the elephant in the room. You know, how are you going to sustain these huge developments?
Something
has
to give.
Something will have to give.
David does bring up a good point. You know, so this is where we're in a situation today, David, and that's you bring up some excellent points. Where Arizona is 90% urban today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we live, and most of this population is in 7.2 million people in the state. I think it's like 6.4 million in the Phoenix area, Maricopa County.
Wow.
Then we have about another million here in this valley in Tucson. And the growth rates are projected to have 10 million people in the state by 2050. So David's points are well taken. Some folks, David, and I'm not saying I agree with it, but I'm just saying for the sake of discussion, some folks put forth the argument that we ought to accept the fact that this is going to be a large urban state and we need to develop and direct our water resources towards that urban development. And some of those folks have suggested what agriculture is nothing more than a water banking entity. So a place to hold the water and hold the water rights. And when the cities need it, they're going to get it. And that's what we're down to. We're adding to this kind of discussion. So there's some folks that would advocate that. They have that school of thought. I don't agree with that. And I think we need to have some degree of balance and find a coexistence with regard to urban development. I think it's going to happen whether you and I like it or not, David. You know, the powers that be in this state and the economic drivers are such that seems to be the case. And people are moving from around the country to the Southwest pretty rapidly. So I think we've got to find a balance and a coexistence. How we do that, I'm not sure, but I know tomorrow there's a conference that takes place in Phoenix. It's the Agribusiness Water Council annual meeting, and there's going to be a lot of folks discussing these very topics. And it's a place, it's a forum for us to have this kind of public discussion, and I think that's what we need to do. We need to have various points of view, we need to listen to one another, and we need to not only think about how we save our own necks today, but what we do in terms of the impacts of our decisions on on the future.
Tom, I know we're 5 minutes past the break, but just for continuity purpose, another David just sent me a question. Let's see if we can quickly address this one. The other David, David on the phone, now a David Facebooking me saying we need food, agriculture, of course, to sustain ourselves, but not cotton, which uses up all our water. Just drive up to Phoenix and all you see are cotton fields. Cotton is then shipped to China after being harvested. Your quick comment.
Yes, sir. Good point. Good point. That's a common one, you know, David. I've been in this state for over 35 years, 36 seasons now, and I've been hearing that consistently. But, you know, the reason our farmers grow the crops they do, including cotton, is really they're well adapted to the desert. They're heat tolerant, salt tolerant. They're highly productive. And there's a strong market for it. Now, you say, yes, they get exported out. When push comes to shove, that's a global market. When push comes to shove, in a state like maybe 10 years, I don't know what the time frame would be, that those crops would have, they have to be considered on a production basis as a changing priorities. But right now, the reason they grow them is for those reasons. They aren't doing it for sport, I can assure you. And they're doing it, farmers are doing it to stay alive. And it's a crop that's well adapted to the heat, to salt. It's highly productive, and there's a strong market for it. But things are shifting. We could go on and talk about that. I could tell you the past 20-year history in Yuma with that same thing.
All right, we'll take a break right here. More with Dr. Jeff Silvertooth.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. A lot of good content today in the program. We try to keep it that way every day from noon to one. Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. We send so many of our listeners over there, and everybody says the same thing. They have a great time. It's an area that people, even that have grown up in Tucson, they just really don't know about. It's only a three-hour drive east of Tucson, but you really get a different feel over in the land of enchantment. Check out southwestnewmexico.org. Lots to do, like hiking in the, we're talking about earlier, about places like Mesa Verde and up at the Casa Grande National Ruins. Well, in Silver City, they have the Cliff Dwellings National Monument, and Jeff Silvertooth with me in studio. Jeff, there are still a lot of questions. That was that same time period. What happened to those people that were living in the Gila National Wilderness at the Cliff Dwellings?
That was the same. Yeah, same phenomenon.
Same period.
All the Four Corners, the Anastasi.
With that massive drought that lasted, almost a century.
Yeah, it was what we call a mega drought. That's what we're into now. We're kind of a small mega drought compared to that.
Yeah.
But it shows you what the potential is in the environment. It's like studying history. It doesn't solve and answer all your questions, like in our case, how long will this drought last? But it shows you what's possible, you know?
All right. Dr. Jeff Silvertooth with us, University of Arizona agronomist, regular contributor, our contributor on agriculture. Jeff's one of our most popular guests, as evidenced by all the questions that have been coming in. Let's take Roberta next. She's on line one. Go ahead, Roberta.
Thank you. I heard twice now that when the federal government passed that bill, inflation and infrastructure and everything, that they set aside $9 billion for water. If that's true, why can't that be used to build a desalination plant? Because it seems like everything else is just putting a Band-Aid on the problem while it grows.
Do you know anything about federal money that could go to desal?
Right. Roberta, I think what you're talking about, thank you very much for the comment. It's a good comment, good point. I think what we're referring to is what they call the Inflation Reduction Act,
yes.
The IRA.
Yes.
And I think what you're referring to is actually our senator from Arizona, Kyrsten Sinema, was instrumental in adding $4 billion. Now, there may be extra for the five that you're getting up to nine, but I think it was $4 billion, Roberta, that she was able to make sure was included for water. It was particularly Western water, and it's primarily going to infrastructure. Now, infrastructure would include things like desal. But right now, I think what has been impressed upon her, there's enough need up and down. I've been hearing this for 20 years. There's enough need up and down the Colorado River with the irrigation districts and just the delivery. I think we lose something like 1.5 million acre feet a year in losses between Boulder Dam and down below Yuma. And so the intentions there were to try to improve the infrastructure to improve our efficiency of conveyance of all water in the Colorado River districts or systems as a whole. Now you go to the desalinization point. That's a very good point. And there's been some discussion about building a desal plant with Mexico down on the Sierra Cortez down around El Golfo, and bringing that pipe and that water up the river and bringing it into Arizona. Well, I think they've estimated it to be like 250,000 acre feet a year. It's too expensive. Mexico's they need the water too. But what's probably, in my view, now this is my view, this is where I branch off fact and tell you mm-hmm. Jeff's thoughts on this, on your comments, Roberta. In my view, if that were to happen at all, desalinization, where I think it should take place, and maybe there's good reasons why it isn't, is over along the coast of California, where they're taking in California at least over 4.4 million acre feet, like 27% of the Colorado River. A lot of it's being piped through the aqueduct into the Metropolitan Water District. If California were to, particularly Southern California, were to build desal plants and pull that water, they could replace that Colorado River water. That's to me, but the California voters just voted a desal plant down last year, I believe.
Yeah, I think they did. Dr. Jeff Silvertooth, see you in October. Thanks,
Thank
Jeff.
You, sir. Thank you, Roberta.
All right, that'll wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show on behalf of Dr. Silvertooth, Tom Engineering Producing, Bill Buckmaster saying thanks for listening. See you in about 23 hours.